Have your kids ever done something that was so frustrating or so upsetting that you just blew it with them? That you said things that you wish you could just take right back? Or maybe you said the right things, but they came out wrong. They came out sarcastic or angry. Well, you know, I've been there. I'm Dr. Charles Fay, and I know love and logic, and I'm trained as a child psychologist, and from time to time, to this very day, I have that problem. So if you have that problem, you don't beat up on yourself, but that's really the topic of this talk we're going to have here. How to stay cool, or at least pretend you are, when your kids are just driving you nuts. And I'm here with Leah Wells, and Leah is one of our independent facilitators of Early Childhood Parenting Made Fun program. How are you, Leah?
I'm well, thank you. How are you?
Well, good. Thanks for being with us. Now, you have a lot of experience teaching parents about love and logic. And what would you say is the biggest stumbling block people run into?
Well, it's what you just said. It's staying calm when your kids are really pushing all buttons.
Right. And you know, one of the things we teach in the program is what? The importance of using
empathy.
Yeah. Yeah. And tell the listeners a little bit about what that is and why it's so important.
Empathy in love and logic means that you're going to deliver a strong dose of sadness for the child before you lay down the consequences so that they have an opportunity to connect the consequence to their poor choice, not your anger and frustration as the parent.
Oh, that sounds so good. I mean, you know, listening to us talk, it just sounds like, oh, that would be so simple. And then you get in the trenches and out of your mouth. I mean, from time to time, it sounds like this. For crying out loud. You know, that's the way I was raised the first half of my life. And most of us have parents that reside inside of our heads. And they make us say stuff that we don't want to say when we're, you know, when we're frustrated, right? And most people were brought up with anger or sternness or even some sarcasm. And a lot of parents did it that way. And a lot of kids turned out fine. But what we're really going for here is creating kids who will behave even when you're not watching them.
Exactly.
And the connection here with empathy is that if I can be empathetic when my kids act up, they develop a voice in their head that goes something like this. Boy, when I mess up, there's consequences. And those consequences make my life really sad. And so I wonder how this next decision is going to affect my life. And so they have this little mobile manager that follows them through life. Now, the problem with using anger is kids develop a different voice that says, ooh, when I make bad decisions, I might get caught and then I get punished. But next time I better not get caught. See, so the reason we're talking about this empathy here is it ups the odds that your kids will behave when you're not hiding in the trunk of the car and they're driving around with their friends and they're 16 or 17 years of age. They'll behave when you are not there. So Leah, what do parents actually say about this skill besides how hard it is? I mean, give us some examples of people struggling with it.
Well, one of the things that I think is pretty remarkable is when people are first starting to employ this, they come back to class and go, wow, this is phenomenal. This is amazing. It's working so well. And then by the end of the class, they come in and they go, okay, I'm struggling, because it's energy. It's work to put in, but parenting is work.
Right.
So, you know, they come in and say, how do you maintain it? What do I keep doing here? If it's the end of the day and I've just come in and everybody's just dumped their stuff, the house is a complete disaster and I'm trying to get dinner going and World War III is erupting around me, how do I keep empathy?
Right. Or now that my kids have, I've been using it with them, now they're using it back on me.
Yes.
And they're saying, well, this is so sad, Mom, you know, and I'm starting to backslide. Okay. So one of the first things we want to share with you folks is, first of all, the importance of empathy. And I think we've established that it really leaves kids more likely that they'll put you in a sanitary nursing home someday. And it helps them learn cause and effect. But so what does it sound like? And how does this help? Well, one of the things we teach, Leah, is you memorize just one of them. Talk with the listeners about that.
There are several phrases you can use, and the biggest piece of this is picking one that is natural for you, because it must come out sounding truly genuine and not artificial or sarcastic. So some of the examples are, oh, how sad, or as your parents loved, what a bummer. One of the best ones I've heard lately is, oh, that's never good.
Oh, and yeah, that's, so. You know, and if you live in Minnesota, it sounds like this, oh, that's never good.
Yeah.
Yeah. And so you got to find one that fits your local dialect and culture. So tell us some more.
So you pick that one phrase and you practice it. You write it down many times. And then as you guys teach, you actually hope and pray for the opportunity to use it.
Right, right. See, because kids learn, we all learn from mistakes. And if our kids can make enough of them when they're really little, they won't have to make the life and death ones when they're older.
Right. Right?
The price tag of mistakes goes up every day. So what Lee and I are talking about here is that this empathy starts with us actually memorizing the words to say and using those before. And what did I say? Before we deliver the consequence. And so it sounds something like this. Oh, that's never good. Oh, talk to your teacher. Yeah. Oh, I know. You know, the kid's going to be, well, what's my fault? And she's always picking on me. And it's fun to just say, oh, I know. And I had to spend half an hour talking to her on the phone. And the sad part about that is that was the half an hour I'd set aside to clean up all that dog poop out in the yard, right? So there's an empathy, then the consequence. So love and logic is not permissive. Please don't be mistaken about that. And Leah, is it punitive?
Absolutely not.
No. See, the great thing about using the empathy is it allows us to be strict and have high standards for our kids, but do it in a way where they grow to love and respect us long term. So what are some of the other empathetic statements you've heard through your experience teaching parents?
Well, I'm a California native, so another one of my personal favorites is dude.
Oh, dude. Yeah, so it might sound like this. Kid runs in the house. Somebody stole my surfboard. Oh, dude. How are you going to buy another one? You know, so it's the empathy, then the consequence, right? Or one of my favorites is just this. Dang. That's a great one I learned in Oklahoma. Dang. And so it might sound like this. A little kid comes up and says, I can't find my toys. Oh, dang. What? Well, you probably remember the new policy. What's a policy? It's fun to use big words with little kids. You know, you kind of teach them some things. Policy is kind of like a rule. And remember when I said that the toys that you pick up, you get to keep. And the toys that I pick up, I get to keep. Dang. Right? So it's that firm dose of empathy, that loving sadness, before we deliver the consequence. That's the critical sequence there. You know, for years we were teaching this and people were not doing it correctly because we weren't teaching it correctly. We were saying use empathy and consequences. So people were given the consequence and then they were using the empathy. And the kid was already so upset that they couldn't hear the empathy anymore. So it's got to come first. So let's put the car in reverse and back up. And Leah, I didn't start this by talking about empathy, did I?
No.
What did I start with?
How to keep your cool when things get hot as a parent.
Yeah. And so I'm thinking, how in the world do you use empathy if you can't first keep your cool? And one of the ways we keep our cool is by having the confidence of having these things memorized. There's something about having a plan ahead of time that makes it easier. And Leah, I know you didn't always use love and logic as a parent yourself. How did you memorize your empathetic statement and how did you remember it when you were first learning?
Well, I had a couple different techniques. One is that I kept hearing your voice in my ear from teaching the classes. So that was a really good positive thing. So for those who get a hold of audio cassettes and programs like this, that'll be great. But the core thing I did was a trick that your dad actually taught at one of the live conferences, and that is write it down many times on sticky notes and plaster them everywhere, and they serve as a visual stop sign for me.
Yeah, so you might have some on your alarm clocks when you wake up, and you, and it's always the same empathetic statement. So you know, you're not getting creative. So it might just say, "How sad," mm-hmm. you know, and then you might go in the bathroom and you lift up the toilet seat, and right there it says, "How sad," and all over the house you're going to see "How sad," and in your car you're going to see these little sticky notes that say, "What? How sad," and that's a great way of getting prepared. But is that enough? I don't think so.
I don't think so either.
No. Let's say, Leah, that I'm your daughter, and I come home at 3 a.m. with a guy named Axel that you've never met before. And he's got a lot of piercings. In fact, he'd never make it through the metal detector at the airport. And you've been worried sick. Now, what are the odds that you're going to have a really loving dose of empathy right on the tip of your tongue?
Pretty low.
Yeah.
Unless I've been preparing. Of course, it sounds like I have plenty of time there to prepare.
Unfortunately, yes. But that, you know, the average parent is going to think, you know, I know love and logic, and right now I ain't going to use it. You know, I'm going to climb all over this kid. You know, where have you been, for crying out loud? You know, this is, you know. And that's the natural response. But we better give people a better alternative so that they don't have to feel bad about it later on. See, because a lot of times what happens is people lose it with their kids and they yell at them and then they feel guilty. And then they back down.
Mm-hmm.
See, we call it the rant, rave, and rescue cycle. You rant and rave at them, then you feel guilty, and you rescue them from the consequences of their poor decision just to make yourself feel better. And that's never a good strategy. So what do you do in a situation like that where you're just so angry that you can't think straight?
You delay the consequences.
Yeah, yeah. And what does that sound like?
It sounds like this. Oh, sweetie, I am so glad you're safe. Ah, that is so great. And you know what? We're going to talk about this tomorrow. Just go to sleep. We'll talk about it tomorrow. And, oh, honey, try not to worry about it.
Oh, that's a fun one. Now, let's say I'm so angry that I can't even say that. What can you say to a kid? I like this one. Let's see if this sounds reasonable. I am so angry right now, I can't even think straight. I make better decisions when I'm calm. We'll talk about this tomorrow. Is there anything wrong with saying that to a kid?
I don't think so. I think it also models how to show them that they need to get their own emotions under control before they address an issue.
Really? You know, I think that America would be a much safer place if kids were hearing their parents and seeing their parents get really mad like this and then saying, you know, I make better decisions when I'm calm. We'll talk about it later. And then that gives you a chance to call the FBI and CIA and UPS and, you know, all those places and get some support, some backup and get yourself calmed down so you can really talk with the kid and handle it well. And, you know, I know a dad who did that, and the kid was coming home late, and about a week later she goes out and gets in her car, and there's that club on the steering wheel. And she comes running in and calls him at work. He says, "Dad, you take that club off my steering wheel." And he says, "Oh, this is so sad." See, I've for years, Leah, I've tried to teach people how to use empathy when they're angry. Never been successful.
Someone has to teach themselves.
Yeah. And you know what else? I can't use it when I'm angry. I realized that the other day. You know, I realized that I've been trying to teach people to do something that I can't even do myself. And have you noticed that when you use empathy and you're angry, what's it sound like?
Sarcasm.
It sounds like sarcasm, doesn't it? Yeah. And so I encourage people not even to try. When you're really fit to be tied with your kids, it's fine to tell them that you're angry. You don't put them down. You're not ranting and raving. You're just, with steel in your voice, you're saying, "I'm too angry to think straight. We're going to talk about this later." And then you get away from the kid before you're tempted to argue with them too much about the situation. So what are some of the other things that come up for parents? I mean, you know, you have two boys at home.
I do.
And I imagine that even though they are love and logic kids, they still act up from time to time.
They do.
And you work at home as well.
Yes, I do.
Right. You have business and you work at home. as a mom, which is a lot of work. And so what are some of the things that come up on a daily basis that make it harder for you and that sync up with some of the issues that we see with parents that are taking the classes?
One of the biggest challenges I personally face, and one I'm still working on myself, is the constant interruptions. I do work from home, and I'm required to be on the phone sometimes. And believe it or not, I don't want my clients to have to listen to my children in the background while I'm trying to assist them.
Right. And so they're constantly interrupting you. And so what have you found to be helpful? I mean, have you ever had a time where you handled it really well and you said to yourself, hey, that was good?
Yeah, absolutely. And yeah. What I did is I had the courage to tell the client, may I call you back?
Uh-huh.
And I got off the phone and it was, oh, this is so sad. A little bedroom time coming up here. And they got to go to their rooms until I was off the phone.
Yeah, yeah.
And, did that for a couple days, and pretty soon the phone interruptions started to go way down.
Oh, yeah, because they don't like being in there, do they?
No.
And, you know, this brings us to a point where I want to level with you about one of the bad habits I fall into from time to time. Say, when I'm working at home, or my wife and I are trying to get things done at home, and the kids are kind of acting ornery, we get into this kind of habit of saying, you just cut that off. Cut that out. Just stop that. You know, and we're kind of trying to get them to stop, and we don't really want to stop what we're doing. And then it's kind of like they believe it or not, they keep acting up. Can you believe that? And then we do, well, no, just didn't I tell you to stop that? You know, cut that out. You know, and then guess what?
Do it again.
Yeah, they keep doing it again, and so we say, well, stop that. Now all this time, guess what's happening inside of us?
We're getting more and more frustrated.
Yes, we're getting more and more frustrated. We're getting more and more angry. We're remembering less and less about the importance of empathy. And our kids are getting more and more anxious and unhappy because they really want those limits. That's what they're really saying. They're saying, you know, Mom, Dad, we need you to love us enough to really reel us in here. And so what am I really talking about here, Leah?
Warning.
Yeah, yeah. It's so tempting to just get in the habit of giving repeated warnings. And we've learned that kids either, they come to need the same number of warnings you give them. So what do you teach your group? How do you talk with them about that helps them? What can we share with the listener?
First part is awareness, knowing that you're doing it and when. And then the second part that I try to help parents with is to remember to set the limit once, then follow through with loving action.
So let's say that again for everybody.
Set the limit once, then follow through with loving action.
Set the limit once and follow through with loving action instead of a bunch of words, right?
Yes.
You know, you mentioned that, Leah, and the reason I had you say it twice and then I said it again is because that's one of those little things that we can memorize. See, as you're listening to this CD, you pick out just a couple little short statements that make sense to you that really ring true and write them down too. And those are things you think about as you're falling asleep. You know, so you're falling asleep, at night, and you're saying to yourself, set the limit once and follow through with loving action. Set the limit once and follow through with loving action. And you visualize yourself doing that as you're falling asleep. And we've come to believe that the subconscious mind keeps working on that when you're asleep. And it's a great way of kind of programming yourself so that you're able to do that more effectively. So really what we're saying is we are going to just ask them, how many times, Leah, was that?
Once.
One time? Is that it?
That's it.
Shouldn't we count to three?
The only experience I've ever had with counting to three was prior to Love and Logic, and I found that by the time that my child thought about moving at 2.999, I was about 10 times more frustrated than I was before I started counting.
You know, I've noticed something about the employers that I know, because I also run a business, and I found that most of them just don't get off on having to count to three every time they ask an employee to do something.
No.
And but they're seeing more and more employees who've been raised that way and actually believe that you really don't have to have a pulse at work until your boss, you know, reminds you about three times. So We do our kids no favors. We do ourselves no favors when we try to give repeated warnings or count to three. So the hard part about that is, you know, there are times where maybe we can't get off the phone, or maybe there's a time where we're driving, you know, and there's just nothing we can do about that. Here's my recommendation for those situations. You look up in the mirror of the car and you look at the kid and you say, "Ooh, this is a problem." And then you don't say another word. You say, "Ooh, this is a problem." And then you let them think that nothing's going to happen. Yeah, you don't say another word to them. And then you go to them later on and you say, "Oh, there was a problem in the car." "What are you talking about?" "Well, I had to hear all that fighting with your brother and you, and gosh, that just really drained my energy. So you guys are going to have to put that energy back in. And I think the best way for you to do that is to hire your own babysitter so your dad and I can go and have a nice quiet meal together. She'll be here at 6. She'll ask you how you plan to pay her. We love you. Have a nice evening." Right? Now, how many times do you think your kids in the future are going to have to hear, "Ooh, this is a problem," before they start looking at each other and saying, "Shut up, man, we're going to end up having to hire a babysitter," something like that. So it's okay for kids to think they've gotten away with something. See, the problem with giving all the warnings and reminders is they basically condition kids to need them, and they raise our arousal level, okay? So what's another one of the common problems that parents run into that make empathy harder?
One of the things that I was talking to a good girlfriend of mine about the other day was that her kids dialed into each other and tuned her out. So here she is trying to walk in and go, "Oh, guys, this is so sad. Look at the mess she made." And they just blast past her.
And what do they do? I mean, what do they say?
They don't. They just don't listen to her.
Oh, and they don't?
She's taught them to ignore her.
And how old are they?
They are 9 and 4.
Oh, that's great. So that's another example of when kids misbehave and think they've gotten away with stuff. See, I love for kids to think they've gotten the upper hand on me, because when they realize they haven't, it really locks in the lesson. You know, it's kind of like they'll remember that forever. I'll tell a little story about a lady in Detroit, Michigan, who had a couple kids that were like that, and they were arguing over the TV. You know, they didn't like the channel one was watching, and so they're griping, and she walks in and she says, "Oh, this is so sad." And they say to her, "Mom, you're interrupting our show," which didn't help her use her empathy very much. And she said, "Guys, you're not going to shut it off?" "No, we're, Mom, you're not a window, you know." And so she finally says, "Okay, I guess I'm going to have to do something about this." And she ran out of the room. She said she was so angry she couldn't think straight. And they watched their show, and they were so happy, and they were just excited. And then later that week, they went off to school, you know, and they came back home that afternoon, and where the TV used to be, there was a nice little table with a picture of the family. And at that precise moment, they suddenly realized that it was never wise to treat their mother that way. See, there's a big myth out there that says we have to do something about a problem right away. You know, and many of us were taught that in college or read books about it. You can never delay the consequence, right? And that's the biggest pile of barnyard waste I've ever run into in my entire life. I mean, I know I was kind of wishy-washy on that, how I feel about that. But it's stupid. That's a little more concise there. It sets you up for responding with anger instead of empathy. I wonder how many cases of child abuse have occurred across the United States because people believe that hogwash. So it's okay for the kids to think they've gotten away with something as long as you do something that is very decisive later on that really makes the point, and they'll never forget it. And you can walk away feeling like you were sweet and loving and also firmly capable of holding them accountable. Okay, so Leah, what's another issue that comes up?
From time to time, I have a parent that says, you know, I'm using the empathy and it doesn't seem to work. And I ask them, what do you mean? And they say, my child just seems to not care.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, one of the things I've challenged them to think about is, do they really not care, or are they really good at showing you that they don't, even if they do?
Fine. Whatever.
Yeah.
I don't care. You know what's really fun to say to a kid? Lee, have you ever said this? Oh, good. That makes it easier.
Yeah, I love that one, actually.
Now, you can really tell if a kid doesn't care, because if you say, oh, that's good, because you'd be real upset if you cared. You know, a lot of times, the ones that really do care, they'll keep trying to convince you. Well, I don't care. Oh, that's really good. Well, I'm serious. I don't care about this. Oh, well, I'm glad that you don't care, because I would really be upset. We wouldn't have enough Kleenex, you know, if you really cared about it. No, I'm serious. It's kind of fun to play with. But there are some that don't. Mm-hmm. Have you ever run into those?
Or, yes.
Yeah. And what have you found with that, Leah?
Oftentimes, frankly, with a lot of the kids that I've dealt with and parents in those situations, they're under care for additional issues. And
yeah.
So I usually encourage the parent to connect with the counselor that they're working through. You know, most of them endorse and support and recognize love and logic, and then they work together in tandem with that person because
right.
they know the child better than I do.
Right. You know, there are some kids that don't care, and there's a number of reasons for that, which do boil down to the fact that, you know, they've got some deeper issues that need to be dealt with. And sometimes the deeper issues are biological issues. The kid has special needs, or the kid has depression. It's a, you know, we're finding that a large percentage of the cases of depression are biochemical. There's a lot of genetic the variability and contribution to that issue. So sometimes it's a matter of dealing with those issues. Other times it's a matter of dealing with family dynamics issues. And, you know, we're seeing more and more kids that are just so depressed about their situation in life, with their parents not getting along or their parents being divorced or whatever, that they're so depressed they don't even care. You know, and if you've ever had even an hour's worth of depression over anything, you can understand that when you feel that way, you really don't care. Who cares? You know, I mean, how can this be any worse than what I'm feeling right now? And so the message there is get yourself some good professional help. One of the things, though, that we see with normal kids, healthy kids, is that sometimes the parents aren't spending enough time focusing on what the kid is doing well and spending enough time just enjoying the kid during the good times. And see, the stronger the relationship you have with your kids, the more they're going to care about consequences. In fact, Leah, you probably have people in your life that you love dearly. And how does it feel when you disappoint them?
It's crushing.
Yeah, yeah. And that's the way it was with me and my mom and dad, is that they weren't always perfect parents, but I knew beyond a shadow of a doubt that they loved me. And so, and they showed me a lot. And I was very fortunate. And so when I acted up and they locked in the empathy, oh, that felt horrible, because I was disappointing somebody that I really wanted to please. So that's just some random thoughts on that, Leah. Any other thoughts on that particular topic or other ones that come up?
One of the things that I really encourage parents to do is model the behavior they're hoping to see. And it kind of tags along a little bit with what you just said in catching them doing something well. Model some of those things. If a parent is frustrated, in other words, having a hard time with their empathy because a child is constantly forgetting things or not being, you know, not prepared the next day when they're trying to get out the door, I encourage them to model the night before, getting all their things together and just kind of talking out loud, doing things they'd normally be doing anyway, but verbalizing them with little ears around.
Oh, yes. The best parents are loud thinkers. Yeah. And that is that when they're going through their daily lives and they're doing what they have to do, they're thinking out loud. You know, they're saying, well, what do I have to do tonight so I won't be in a rush tomorrow? You know, and where should I put my clothes so that they're right in front of me when I get up? I don't even have to figure out which ones I'm going to pick. And I better put my work folder right by the door so I don't forget it, you know, and my father, his thoughts had a lot of volume when we were kids, and that really helped a lot. So you can model those things. Now, the only problem with that is that it's hard. You know, modeling is, I don't know. I think it's probably my least favorite parenting strategy because it requires that I behave like an adult. but, you know, that's my issue. So let's move on to another issue here. We have our little notes in front of us. And another one that comes up is what, Leah?
Losing steam at bedtime. You know, this again takes a lot of energy, but parenting takes energy.
Mm-hmm.
But when you have been calm and empathetic and working really, really hard on it all day long, and then things explode at the end of the day when you have the least amount of energy left, a lot of parents say they break down.
Yeah. So I'd like to hear about that because, you know, we just had a kid. I had another child at 42. So bedtime for me is like 4 p.m. So help me with that. What do I do?
One of the things that I think that really helps parents, first of all, just get through that is making it fun. Don't forget to interject the humor and the fun into a process. And that tends to lift everybody's energy a little bit. I mean, not go crazy. It is bedtime. But having a little bit of fun with that, injecting some choices, giving the child a chance to have a little bit more control around that. But then recognizing where your own limitations are, too. There have been several nights where sometimes I kind of have to tag that in. And
right.
Step out for a few minutes to get myself back under control. I kind of have to say I'm starting to get frustrated. I do better at nighttime and giving stories and being loving when I can calm down. I'm going to have your dad step in for a few minutes.
Yeah, you know, some of the best, and I'm going to risk here, I'm going to go out on a limb. I may get some letters over this, but I've noticed that some of the best mothers and wives are the ones who have a hard time delegating. You know, they love being moms and they love being wives and they take a lot of pride in being good mothers. And some of them have in their mind that good mothers don't ask their husbands to do, you know, husbands had a hard day at work. And, you know, if I'm a good wife and a good mother, then I won't ask him to help me out with that. And, you know, the sad thing for a lot of men is we get deprived of some of the most enjoyable things that, you know, most of the men I know really love. Taking care of the kids. They really get off on it. And so I guess the point I'd like to make here is that don't kill yourself trying to be a good mom, the perfect mother or even the perfect father. It's just you get some support. Now, let's say you're a single parent. You know, that makes it even tougher. What are some strategies here? And I'd like to share with you something. Now, most of you who are listening can relate to the idea that from time to time your kids get into a bad habit. You know, in a certain period of the day or a certain activity becomes a problem. It might be getting ready in the morning or it might be shopping or it might be going to bed at night or whatever. And they get into this bad habit and then it's like, predictable. You know for sure they're going to pull the same stunt. They're going to need 3,000 drinks of water, you know, before bedtime and have to, you know, that kind of thing. That presents a wonderful opportunity. And that's when you say to yourself, these kids need a practice session. Sometimes we call it a strategic training session. And what that means is that since it's a chronic problem, you're going to step back and say, I'm going to put together a little plan here. And I'm not going to implement it until I'm totally ready. And the plan for bedtime might look like this. Let's say it's a single parent, and the first thing they need to do is find somebody who can help them out a little bit. So they're going to talk to some friends or make some friends, and the best way to get support is you volunteer to help other people, and then they feel bonded to you and are willing to help you. And so that's the first step. And then you say to yourself, okay, I'm going to have somebody show up at bedtime. You know, they're just going to show up, and the kids already know them a little bit, but they're going to show up at the house, and I'm not going to warn them ahead of time, the kids. No, they're not even going to know this is going to happen. And so what's going to happen is I'm going to have this person show up, and then I'm going to say to them, guys, I haven't been getting any sleep because you haven't been staying in your rooms. And you haven't been, going to bed like we've been trying to do. And I'm so worn out. I need to go sleep at the hotel or I need to go sleep at grandma's house so I can get some sleep. And, your babysitter's going to be here with you. And again, they have to pay. Kids always have to pay for babysitters when they have them because they've been naughty. Right. And, you know, if a parent can do something like this, you usually don't have to do it too often before the kids start looking around every night. You know, is the doorbell going to ring? You know, what's my crazy mother or father going to do next, right? And I often comment that even if it doesn't change the kid's behavior, you get a night's sleep, right?
Absolutely. And that confidence in handling it well gives you the energy to keep going.
And you know, and don't, again, the biggest issue here is you don't do it until you've really got a good plan. And again, put up with some bad behavior for a while. It's better to put up with bad behavior while you're planning than try to deal with it when you have no plan. Okay, so again, it's better to put up with bad behavior when you're planning than jump into it and try to deal with it when you have no plan. Now, another example is misbehavior in public. That can just drive people nuts, you know. And I know a dad who had a little planning session, and the kids would always act up in the car and, you know, out in public. And so one of the components of a planning session is you find some time to practice with the kids how to behave. So you're going to practice, and it might mean you get in the car and you drive around the block and say, okay, guys, I want to make sure you guys know how to behave so we're in good shape, because I'd really like to take you over to Mickey Mozzarella's Pizza Palace. I mean, this is just going to be – and you always pick some place that you hate going. That way, if the kids act up and you have to leave, you're saying to yourself, ooh, goody, I don't have to stay, right? And so you say, well, I'd like to go to Mickey Mozzarella's, so let's drive around the block. And if you guys can behave well when we drive around the block, then we'll give her a shot tomorrow, right? And, of course, they'll be angels. Oh, they will suddenly act like Harvard graduate students in the backseat of that car. And then here comes the day for Mickey Mozzarella's. And that's when you don't say anything about their behavior. In fact, you're just praying the whole way over there to Mickey's. You're thinking, oh, please let these kids act up, because I hate going to that place. It's the loudest, most obnoxious place with kids running around and noise. Oh, and see, the key here is that as soon as they start acting up, you look at them and you say, oh, you're not ready. And that's it. Well, we'll be good. Oh, I know, but you're not ready today, and you take them home. No discussion about it whatsoever. And then you can try it again. If they have problems, you just turn around and you say, you're not ready, right? And what we found is that when parents start doing that, when they have control over the situation, they find that their kids are a little bit better behaved when they don't have control over the situation. So when we have those situations where it's a chronic issue, put together a plan and pull it off without breaking a sweat. So they really start wondering what's up your sleeve.
Actually, that story reminded me of a mom who was having some challenges with one of her three children, saying, shall we say, some disrespectful things to her when he wasn't getting his way.
Oh.
And she was struggling with this for a couple of days, trying to get through the events in life that we have to do, go to the grocery store, go to the doctors, things like that. And after a particularly stressful day where he had pretty much had nuclear meltdown, she called her husband and said, let's plan here. And their decision was to, again, five members of the family have dad bring home four ice cream sundaes and not say anything. And then after dinner,
four
ice cream sundaes were distributed. And when this child in question said, wait, where's mine? Dad's the one that stepped up and said, honey, this is so sad, but I heard about what happened today. And when sweet things can't come out of your mouth, sweet things can't go in.
That is so sad. I mean, I'm about ready to lose it right here. I mean, I bet that had a big impact.
Huge impact. She said it was just tremendous. And one of the younger brother even said, here, bud, I'll give you a bite, and, you know, tried to take pity on him. But she said that outings after that were much better. And it reminds me of one of my favorite sayings that you have, and that is short-term discomfort is a whole lot better than long-term pain, because as much as we can kind of giggle about it right now, that was hard to do.
Oh, I'm sure it was. And, you know, I'm thinking about conflict right now, too. I mean, that's you're pretty certain to have conflict if you do that. I mean, the kid's going to be really upset, and you're going to feel horrible. And I believe that at the heart of most people's anger and frustration is an avoidance of conflict. instead of dealing with the problem when it's still fairly small or it's just started, they keep putting it off. And a lot of parents will say to themselves, well, it's not a big deal, or he's just a little kid, or whatever. And then they just put it off, and they put it off, and then they start feeling really angry and resentful. Same thing happens in marriages. I mean, you know, when you get the worst thing in the world is to get two nice, sweet, soft-spoken people together and have them married to each other, and they don't want to hurt each other's feelings, and they hold everything in, and after a while they're like, I can't stand it when you leave the toilet seat. You know, and it's just this little issue that has become massive. And, you know, if we can just embrace conflict a little more with our kids, too, and deal with those issues when they first come up, kids are happier and we're happier. And, you know, to be frank, the whole world is happier because there's better behaved kids out there. So I was thinking about something here, and now I can't remember what it is.
Well, let me actually take that a step back. And one of the things that I think we can piggyback to that, because again, short-term discomfort's a whole lot better than long-term pain, is when issues compound. And I think, you know, the example of the ice cream, what happens then if the child starts to misbehave at the dinner table and then the night starts to escalate? And a lot of times parents will stop using love and logic in some cases because they go, oh my goodness, this is making it worse, not better. And they need to take that longer term approach. And one of the things that I try to coach parents is plan for that. They're going to do everything in their power to get you back to, if you will, the old way of doing things. So plan those next few steps. If they do this, then how will I respond with empathy? What will the consequence look like? And then if they escalate that, what will the consequence look like? And you have to kind of plan it out a little bit to be successful at it. And then you can charge in with that confidence. And confidence has energy and confidence has a feel. And the parent's grinning like a Cheshire cat and the kid's just not as apt to push it.
Yeah, you know, it's kind of like you think about, I know this is a strange analogy, but if you ever seen Jack Nicholson on The Shining, and you'd ask yourself, you know, would you really mess with that guy? You know, and he was crazy confident. I mean, it's like, you know, if you ever seen Jack smile, you're kind of like, I don't think I want to know exactly what's up his sleeve, right? And that confidence, when we're confident parents, really oozes out. And kids pick up on it quick, and they're a lot less likely to test, and I believe they're a whole lot happier. But you know what? I remembered what I was thinking about here, and there's an awful lot of parenting books out there, and parenting materials that essentially say things like, you know, if you use this stuff, your kids are going to be totally transformed. I mean, they're just not going to act up anymore. And, you know, it's going to be the greatest thing. Or they just kind of give you that impression that you're, you know, this is just going to fix your kid. And I think a lot of people have been misled by that and have kind of come to the conclusion that maybe if I can just find that one way of one thing I could say to the kid or one technique I'd use, this is going to solve all of my problems. And we all know, I mean, when we really think about it, that that's not going to happen, right? But I think that gets in the way of us being able to handle things calmly because we have this fantasy in our head that sometimes goes like this. You know, if I use this empathy and if I do it exactly the way Jim or Charles Fay does it in the book or in the CD, then my kid is going to stop in his tracks and he's going to say, wow, Mom, that was amazing. I don't even know what to say. That was so beautiful. I've really got to reevaluate the way I'm behaving and things are really going to change around here. And, you know, and so when we get the opposite reaction, which is what we'll get. I mean, when we use empathy with kids, they're not going to say, wow, I really know how sad you are for me. No, they're going to say things like, well, you're just making fun of me, or you don't care, or I don't care, or you're mean, or I'm calling social services. By the way, a little kid I know said, I'm calling social security. He didn't have it quite, you know, nailed down right yet. But kids are not going to thank us for this. In fact, I remember when I was a kid, the first 8 years of my life, my parents only had two skills. My dad's was for crying out loud, and my mother's was threatening me that gypsies would show up and steal me if I acted up. And they were always yelling and making threats they couldn't follow through on. And when they learned this love and logic, though, man, things really changed. And they said, I remember they'd say things like, oh, what a bummer, you know. And then they'd provide consequences that I couldn't weasel out of. And I remember hating it and wishing and praying down on my knees that my parents would just go back to the old way and yell at me. It was so much better in my head, right? Why was that?
Because you knew how to manipulate that and use it to your own advancement.
Absolutely. And it was entertaining. It was so fun to watch them lose it. And I didn't have to worry about my behavior. I was too distracted by their behavior. Right? And so, you know, how can we pull this all together for people, Lee, and really, really kind of put a bow on it so that they can walk away with some hope here?
Well, I think that the big thing is, you know, study it, learn it, you know, don't expect it overnight. Keep your expectations realistic. There's going to be some peaks and valleys in love and logic, and to understand that and to study up on the skills. I use the sticky note technique regularly. That's not something I used once and it went away. I use it all the time. And, you know, my husband will come home and see sticky notes everywhere and go, okay, we're back to boot camp, I see. Yeah, we are, because I need to refresh those skills. That's not something that I learned once and forever it's there. I still need to be a student of this myself.
Yeah.
And so to keep the faith, keep it going, and then to really, again, be energized by seeing some of those changes, because you will see some positive changes in your relationship with your child and in their behavior. It's a wonderful thing when you can go, uh-oh, and the child stops what they're doing.
Yeah.
And you get to move forward and you don't have to go through any consequences. And so that's very energizing. But to get back to what you were saying, that doesn't stop there. Ages and stages are going to keep coming.
Oh,
they're going to
hit
different levels of development and they're going to test different areas. And that's normal and expected. And as long as we are staying the course and keeping materials in front of us that can keep us on the path that we know will help us, that's going to go a long way to keeping us calm and keeping us cool in those hot situations.
Right. And, you know, that's why we made this CD. And my dream for this CD is that people would take it and they'd listen to it over and over again in their car or through their headphones at home, or maybe even if the kids are acting up in the car, this is a great CD to play when they're acting up because they might not appreciate it very much. You know? So I knew a woman who used to do that when the kids were acting up in the car. She'd just play the Love and Logic over the CD stereo player, and that was a pretty good consequence for them. But getting back to this, listen to this at least 6 times a week. You know, if you find yourself struggling, listen to it over and over again. And what's going to happen is our thoughts, Leah and I, are going to come through in your head as you're working with your kids. It's kind of a strange thing, but it's really the best way to learn this is listen to the same thing over and over again until you're so sick of it. You just cannot stand it. And I think I'd like to leave you with one other thing, and that is that you're going to mess up. You know, I've been around this practically my whole life, teaching it to thousands of people, and guess what? I still mess up. And there's times where I can get kind of discouraged with myself. And my dream for you is that you say to yourself, it's okay. I don't have to be perfect to raise great kids. I just have to be in the process of learning all the time. Because I'm going to be a great model for my kids if they just see me growing a little bit all of the time, and they see me making mistakes and learning from them. And you know what, folks? One of the most powerful things you can ever do with your kids is from time to time when you're halfway into letting them have it, you know, and you suddenly realize halfway into it that you're letting them have it and you're not happy with the way you're handling it, it's okay to stop and say, you know what? That wasn't in that Love and Logic book. I'll get back to you later with something that was, you know. It's okay to be honest with your kids, to say, oh, I'm blowing it, you know. Leah, have you ever had a situation where you kind of started blowing it with somebody, and then you're kind of saying to yourself, well, I've already screwed up the first part, so I might as well just screw up the rest. You ever?
I hate to admit it, but yes.
Yeah, yeah. That, I think there's that mentality where you just start reaming somebody out and you're like, well, we're already into this. Let's just make it worse.
In
right?
for a penny, in for a pound.
Yeah, exactly. So here's the idea. You get halfway into it. You realize you're blowing it. You look at the kid and you say, oh, I'm learning too. That wasn't in the book. I'll get back to you when I'm calm. I think I'll be able to handle this better when I'm calm. And you're going to be okay. You just remember, you don't have to be a perfect parent to raise great kids. You just need the right amount of love and logic. Thanks for listening. Thank you, Leah.
Thank you.
If you have any questions about this product or any other quality Love and Logic audios, videos, books, or seminars, please call our office at 800-338-4065. A human being will answer the phone between the hours of 7 a.m. and 5 p.m. Mountain Standard Time, Monday through Friday. You can also find us on the web at www.loveandlogic.com. If you're ever in Colorado, stop by our store at 2207 Jackson Street in the heart of beautiful downtown Golden, Colorado. This audio is copyrighted by the Love and Logic Institute. Reproduction in any form for any purpose is prohibited by federal copyright law.